Blog Talk Radio.
Dan, are you on mute?
I'm sorry, everybody. I was giving a beautiful little introduction to the show, and I was all on mute talking to myself, so sorry about that. But, yes, Pam, I am here. Thanks for coming, and thanks for joining and helping host today. And this is Double Helix, and our introduction is like tempered steel glowing red in a bed of coals, the poet is born. Our story is riddled with challenges and changes like blows from a blacksmith hammer, bent and chiseled into shape. So welcome to Double Helix, where we examine the X's and Y's on a show celebrating the human experience, where your true colors are what ties the room together. Get comfortable. We're going to hear this poetry live and beautifully written. Pam, you're my buddy tonight.
I am, and I am so excited. I'm sorry to hear that Faizy isn't feeling well. I hope she feels better soon. Yes, I'm looking forward to hanging out with you and maybe some other cool poets and, you know, just, you know, delving into some great poetry inspired by, you know, another great poet. So, you know, it's going to all be good stuff. And
yeah,
how about you? How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Yeah, I feel bad about Faziana. She felt bad at the last minute. We're kind of like trading off here. Since every once in a while, Faziana and I are like kindred spirits. We seem to switch things. The last show, 2 weeks ago, I was feeling completely horrible, and I had to actually leave the show early because I was literally so overexhausted. I was like seeing things and having trouble seeing and passing out. It was craziness. So Faziana sounds like it's going through somewhat of the same. So I hope she's okay. Life is ridiculously stupidly busy, but, you know, I'm still here. Things are good. That's the, you know, Every day above ground is a good day. It's always filled with hope. That's why I say. Hey, I want to get totally off topic, Pam, because I know you're a music buff like me. Do you know who Haley, this is completely off topic, but I just thought I'd bring this up because I was just listening to the singer, Haley Reinhart. Do you know who Haley Reinhart is?
I don't recognize the name. No.
You should check her out. She's a recent thing. She's young. She's very interesting to me. She was on like one of those, I hate to say dumb shows, like, you know, The Voice or something, the one with Simon Cowell. I've seen videos of her, and I'm like, okay, maybe she's saying, I just really like her. Like, her voice is really good. She sings with a lot with Morgan James, and she's, if you know her, and she sings with, what's that band that I can't believe I'm spacing this. There's this like band that does all these cover tunes, but they do them in like 40s and 30s style. She's a young kid, but she's like an old time rocker. She does all kinds of these cover tunes from like the 60s. You should check out her live version of White Rabbit is amazing.
I love that song anyway. So yeah, check that out. Very cool.
Yeah. So totally off topic,
I'm a little off topic, you know, especially, you know, sometimes we have to do that. I'm constantly, like at the beginning of the show, we have a poetry show and I'm like, you know, I'm talking to Gene or Rex about how I made chicken and rice soup at the beginning of the show.
And
there's nothing in the topic about chicken and rice soup, but dang it, I'm going to talk about it. You know,
that's exactly. Yeah. I've been, you know, very excited about music lately, finding all kinds of new young musicians, which makes me very, very excited. It seems like people who understand music and are actually good musicians and all this I'm just finding a lot of young kids, and it makes me very happy. So anyway, I just thought I'd bring that up. Everybody, go check out Haley Reinhart. She's pretty good. It's pop, you know, she's pop, but she's very good. I'm impressed by her. I also want to welcome, so back on topic here, Northern Phoenix is on the board, and thank you for joining us. And I know Phil is out there as well, too. And Aphasianer, if you're listening, we love you and we miss you, and we hope to see you soon. But we're excited to read the poems there from your contests. So with that said, I believe the first, we got two contests on here, and the first one is some poems based on our good friend Ben Hart. Now, Ben could not, Faisy and I both reached out to Ben. He could not join, mostly because he lives in the Netherlands. So this is, you know, I don't know, some horrible hour in the middle of the night for him, and he wasn't able to do it, you know, with his work hours and all that. I totally understand. Ben, we wish you could join us, but we understand why you can't.
Yeah. So isn't that kid only like 23 years old? Come on, at 23 years old, I stay up 3 days in a row.
Right, exactly. Come on, Ben.
We just have to give him, give him a hard time.
Exactly. Come on, no. Ben. Where are you? Stay up. You need sleep at your age. He is. He's a young, very impressive kid. His poetry, as we all know, is amazing. That checks out his poems. Yeah, absolutely. Everybody checks out his poems. He does the artwork, too. So the artwork that he attaches to his poems is him. So he's a very, very expressive young man. All right, cool. So let's crank on. And, yeah, you're right. I'll give him next time I talk to him, I'll give him a hard time, Pam, for, you know. He can stay up all night. Come on.
No, I think he is an awesome kid and a brilliant poet, and I'm glad we're getting poetry inspired by his lines. So very cool.
Absolutely.
And we will start with the poems inspired by prompt one, which is Behind the Smile, I Love You. Like sunlight imparts the spaces between rain because it simply knows no other way but to dance between veils of iridescence. And
great line, Ben.
Yes. With that being said, I have up A Secret Smile Unveiled by Love by Jenny the Deep, and it goes like this. Celestial tears raining down from the stars as sparks of embers ignite iridescence from afar. Magnetic molten iron pulls us together, an attraction as strong and durable as leather. Intimately, I gently warm your lips with mine, devoting all of myself and time to you as divine. Unveiling your mask reveals a truly stunning surprise, a lovely smile never seen before, so bright. Before you, my days and nights were as blue as sleet. After love gave me you, life has never been so sweet. Waking and sleeping next to that smile on your face, now and forever will be my favorite place. End poem.
Great read. Thank you, Pam. And Jenny says, inspired by prompt one from the contest by Ben and real life to my hubby. So excellent, Jenny. And Jenny, a lot of the stuff that she's been writing has been, you know, kind of, I don't want to say negative. It's been about, you know, kind of bad things and some of the bad times in her life. So it's so great, you know, to always see her writing some very, very positive things. And A Secret Smile Unveiled by Love is an amazing thing. You know, I was just talking to somebody. It's funny, you know, speaking to young kids, I have multiple people, 35 people that work for me, and some of them are young kids. Like, I'm old enough to be their extremely old father. And I was talking to this one kid, and she was like, I was talking about her husband. She's like, oh, yeah, he's just, you know, he can come along too. I mean, we've been together so long that, you know, he's just not there. I'm like, how long have you been together? 6 years. I'm like, 6 years? Are you out of your mind? That's like the honeymoon phase. You know, my wife and I have been together for 35 years. So, you know, that's, it's interesting. And when you're with somebody, you know, long time, it's even that smile, you know, I still get, you know, seeing my wife smile and happy is still, it just, you know, it's my life, right? It makes you feel good. So, you know, I feel just that about it. I like the rhyming that she did, I think was great. And I really like that she rhymed every, you know, line, you know, AABB, right, the whole time, except when she goes, unveiling your mask reveals a truly stunning surprise, a lovely smile never seen before so bright. So it's almost like the smile is you know, setting her off kilter, right? She's just so happy and stunned by the smile that it's she's not rhyming, so she's not, you know, in sync, right? Things aren't, because it's so, you know, takes it over so much. So I really like that. That's how what I got of the use of not rhyming on those lines. And I thought that was really well done. I'm a fan of kind of playing around with rhyme and using it for a specific reason. Waking and sleeping next to that smile on your face, now and forever will be my favorite place. And there is this, you know, not even talking, you know, sexually, there's a special place in bed. Because it is kind of like a, you know, your bed is like a safe, you know, a safe haven type of thing. And, you know, to have your loved one next to you, you know, just kind of makes it, you know, even more safe, more that place to be, you know. So I thought that was a great way to end it. Magnet molten iron pulls us together, an attraction as strong as durable leather. You know, there is that kind of weird connection. I know when I'm away from my wife, you know, and miss her, it's weird to be away, especially I've been working from home for many years now, so we're always kind of together. But when we are away, I can still, you know, there's still that connection I can feel that, you know, I just feel, even when I just talk on the phone, I still feel like we're there. So I thought Jenny did a really beautiful job. And, you know, beautiful, beautiful love tribute to her husband. And, Pam, before you start, I just wanted to say hi to Robbie. Hey, Robbie, Robbie's Poetry. Thanks for joining us on the board.
He has joined us on the show. So, welcome,
excellent.
Robbie. Glad you could join us. I think anyways. Maybe.
You mutating, Robbie? Somebody's there listening.
I don't know. I just saw, hi, Robbie, welcome aboard. So I thought that meant...
Oh. He said that's not me.
Oh,
awesome.
Okay. Welcome, caller. May I ask who we're talking to, please? Okay, maybe no one. You know what? It could be somebody who just wants to listen.
Sure, no problem with that.
I'm not sure, but I'll go ahead and comment. I think this is absolutely a beautiful and heartfelt poem by Jenny. I love that you can see how she's inspired by the romanticism in Ben's poetry. More important that she put in her AN that she's inspired by her real life relationship with her husband. I really liked your observations that you made on the off rhyme and the end line of the second stanza and the idea that that smile is so bright it throws her off kilter. I thought she had great imagery and metaphors in this. I particularly like magnetic molten iron pulls us together. An attraction as strong and durable as leather. And I really like that she went with leather because there's a lot of things that you could say are strong and durable, you know. But the thing about leather is it's strong, but especially once it's treated right, once it's processed right, it's very flexible. And I think that that was a great choice for a metaphor because of the idea of that a relationship needs to be strong and durable, but you also both have to be flexible and, you know, in order to, you know, adjust to what's needed in the relationship. And those end lines just really touched my heart with waking and sleeping next to that smile on your face now and forever will be my favorite place. And to me, that spoke really just beautifully on the whole idea of the kind of love that allows you to feel like you're comforted, like you're supported, and allows you to be yourself and take that shelter. You know, as you were saying, the bedroom, it's not just a place for sex, which it is, obviously, and many other rooms in the household, but we won't go there. We'll save that for Wednesday. And, you know, but it is a place of sanctity, you know, and it's so wonderful the way that Jenny expresses these emotions, I thought this was very well done.
Excellent comment. Yeah, absolutely. Northern Phoenix says that's actually Robbie on the line in out-of-body experience. So, yeah, there we go. That's
I like that.
Robbie.
Yep, yep.
Robbie says...
Sorry.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, Robbie says that leather is very durable. He said my leather jacket is 10 pounds and it makes a good metaphor. It really does. It's very durable except for the fact that don't get it wet. I actually had this beautiful leather jacket when I was younger. It was like a bomber jacket. It was my Indiana Jones jacket, I call it. And I was with a friend of mine, and we went to New York City, pouring rain. And I walked around New York City with it, unfortunately. And then I had to sleep on his couch, and I was freezing. And I slept in the jacket, and it was just disaster.
Oh.
It's gone. I was a young kid. I was in college at the time, so I was probably 20 years old or something, and just, yeah, it's gone. So leather is very good. Don't get it wet, is what I say.
Exactly. But, yeah, that sounds like it was a really cool jacket. Definitely.
Yep. All right. What do we got going here now?
Well, up next we have Mastery of Your Kiss by Captain Kerr. And go ahead, please, Dan, and give that a read.
Absolutely. I would do all things for you through my soul, would perish and die, but temporal flesh reveals in sudden urges, extolling every magnificent rash, sweltering breath, when you clamp your grip on my stubborn pride. and slowly lose the venom from my eyes. With such intrigue, I picked this ripened fruit sliced by my knife and held wickedly in my hands. The soft flesh grown in the royal garden of your youth, its earthly tartness sending pleasure to my glands. Can a poem claim the privilege of your lips or speak of love's uncharted waters in the world to recount the mastery of your kiss in my arms a queen or an adoring peasant girl? End poem. And
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. That was a wonderful read there, Dan, and what an absolutely beautiful write by Captain Kerr. I really like the balance of sensuality and romanticism within this write. When he says in the beginning, when you clamp your grip on my stubborn pride and slowly loose the venom from my eyes, it's that idea of somebody who can bring you out of that bad place that you're in. And with such intrigue, I picked this ripened fruit sliced by my knife and held wickedly in my hand, soft flesh grown in the royal garden of your youth, its earthy tartness sending pleasure to my glands. I like the metaphor of eating from the fruit, almost like it's the fruit from the Garden of Eden, even though it's, it says royal garden of your youth. That you kind of think of the idea of the fruit that you're not supposed to pick, that you're not supposed to long for. And I really like how the end line is questions. Can a poem claim the privilege of your lips or speak of love's uncharted waters to the world? Those to me are just great lines on the whole idea of the power that words have. And the last part makes me think of the whole idea of words. Because in the first part of the poem, the first couple of stanzas, I get the impression of the guy feeling as if they are, the man feeling as if they are 100% in charge. This woman is genteel and, innocent, and he's the one that comes in and holding wickedly in, her fruit with his hands. And then the end question, within my arms, a queen or adoring peasant girl? And at that point, it seems to me as if he's not even sure who she is anymore, which makes him not sure of who he is. Before, he was convinced that he was completely in control of the relationship and his senses. And by the end, he's asking questions, and he's, I think, seeing her in a new light. Now, I could be wrong with that, but that is how I see it. And no matter what, whether I'm wrong or right, it is just absolutely stunning with its imagery and metaphors. So very well done. Are you on mute again, Dan?
Oh, my goodness. Yes, I am just attacked by the mutation monster here. I'm also overtired and finishing my first glass of wine, so that's my excuse.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, very beautiful. I like Captain Kerr's work. And Captain B2's, too, my former partner. So I like all the captains on here. But, yeah, Captain Kerr is great. She's got really great, really good imagery usually on the poems. I would do all things for you, through my soul would perish and die, but temporal flesh reveals sudden urges. That's really, really interesting. That it is cheesy with that, sometimes they can say with that perish and die, but it is very true. Once you interesting, once you understand things, those type of things don't become cheesy because they're so true. I always mention my wife because I've been with her since I was 19. I don't really know any other love. It's just been my life. My wife and my son are the two people I could say that I would die for. If I would gladly die if it was going to keep them, alive, if it was something to save their life. You can see that, and that you feel like that with people. But then temporal revenge, you know, it's I really like how it gets into that, you know, grip on the stubborn pride. You know, basically talking about no matter, you know, how much pride, whatever you have, just the attraction, the sensual attraction that you can have for somebody, it just takes that all away. I've actually read proven chemistry that says that when you're sexually aroused, the chemicals in your body actually make you more, you know, it's not just your inhibitions, they actually make you do more disgusting things. Like, they've done studies that have shown that people who are sexually aroused are more likely to, you know, like pick up a dead rat or clean the toilet or things that are disgusting, because your inhibitions are just gone. Like you're just more likely to do things that you wouldn't normally do. It's not like you enjoy those things, but you're less grossed out by them. It's interesting and it's all the chemicals in your body, you know, and so that the, you know, what this brings up in people to get rid of your pride. Now you just, you know, slowly lose the venom from my eyes. So it doesn't matter how angry you are. You just, you know, infatuated by this person, and your inhibitions take over because you're just so attracted. And then it gets into it in the second stanza, like you said. And then, yeah, asking questions. So you know, the questions are interesting, but the questions to me are almost like, you know, you get out of control of yourself, both in love and in lust, with somebody that you're with, and you almost start questioning yourself because you're not in control, right? You start questioning things. So that's what I got out of it, and very beautiful, very well done. Really enjoyed it. And time. Me to stop yapping on and us to move on with life. So what are we going to do now?
Well, up next we have Evergrow by Cress Tersette, and it goes like this. The mix of sandalwood and sweat on your navy shirt tickles my tongue and my mouth waters. Watching you wield those tools in your craftsman shorts conjures a tang that plants pomegranate roots around my navel till bright blossom sprawls upwards to burst through my breast and creeps to my fingers with tingles to run through your ruffled chestnut hair down your rugged chest. With you, the view of life through my lenses is filtered to vibrant. You're the consonants snuggling my vowels, the muscular tension releasing my ahs and ohs, weaving your worlds, stitching the I with you, how we unite day or night. And as I rub my blonde hair against your dark stubble, nibble your earlobe, swallow the salt of your lips, you pour butter into my cup, for together we bloom, perennial in glistening gold. End poem.
Excellent read, and what a sensual, beautiful, beautiful poem. I want to give Cress Tersette some credit again, off topic too. She has I was looking on her profile, and she has an Alphonse Mucha background, which is both myself and my wife's one of our favorite artists. So I relate to that, Cress. But Evergrow is an interesting title on this, and I'm going to take it as ever-growing, you know, sensuality that can happen either both in the midst of passion or just throughout a relationship. And I think that's really interesting. And that's the way you want it. You know, you hear people growing apart, right? As they're older, they get less and less, you know, intimate or just start growing apart. And, you know, you want to ever grow. And she's describing, you know, passion that just kind of keeps growing. And yeah, you're right. What you said earlier. This is so far that this topic is sounding like the Wednesday night show, but that's okay. We get some other topics too. But very, very, very sensual and beautiful imagery and great, great kind of metaphors. The way she's describing everything, so tasteful yet so erotic and passionate. So everything about this is beautiful. Very, very romantic, Cress. Awesome job. Very, very beautiful. And you got to read it. What are your thoughts?
Yes, this is absolutely beautiful. I have to agree. And, you know, I can see why Ben's poetry lines, especially for this particular prompt, inspired sensuality and romance. I really like the title Evergrow, and I'm not sure of the definition, but like when I hear and when I read Evergrow, I think of two different things. First of all, I think of the evergreen tree, which, you know, is always been green, obviously, as you know, being from a northern climate.
Yep.
And but it's also in many ancient cultures and religion a symbol of fertility. I also think of gardening and how you have certain plants, like certain types of flowers, and I forget the term for it, but you probably know that they come back every year. You know, like,
annuals or perennials, annuals.
Yes,
annuals.
I think so. I'm always better remember the term, but I do know that there are, like, every place I've ever moved into that had flowers planted before it that I didn't plant were planted by somebody else. They just and still kept coming back every year. Those are the only flowers that survived my garden. But, yeah, I think of something that is either eternally blooming or something that is going to grow back stronger every year. I really like where she says, plants pomegranate roots around my navel till bright blossoms fall upward to burst to my breast and creeps to my fingers with tingles. You know, it's just that kind of that energy that you get from when you're around somebody you're attracted to, somebody that you really love. And, you know, oh, well, she does have the word perennial in the poem, so maybe that's their connection there. I don't know why I didn't think of that until I scrolled down. I even read the poem. But, yeah, this has a wonderful sensuality. It's really something that allows all the senses to be treated. And the end line, perennial and glistening gold, makes me think of that quote. Is it J.R.R. Tolkien who said that not everything that glitters is gold? And it makes me think of that quote and the whole idea of finding something better than that monetary richness, finding a richness with love. And so just an amazing write and very well done.
Absolutely. And I believe that I looked it up too because there's something about that on there, but it's actually Shakespeare, All That Glitters Is Not Gold. He says, I looked it up here. It's from The Merchant of Venice. All that glitters is not gold.
Okay.
Often have you heard that told. Many a man his life hath sold, but beyond my outside to behold. Anyway, we could go on and on about Shakespeare, but that's Shakespeare.
Oh, good to know that. Good to know that. I'll remember quotes sometimes, but I won't always remember who said it. But very cool. I'm glad you looked that up.
I gotcha. All right, so I think we're on to a new prompt, I believe. Is that correct?
We are. Would you like to read what prompt two is before I put up the site?
Absolutely. Prompt two is, I believe, from a poem, God is Youth, or from a section, God is Youth. In the parting, there is distance. What's more beautiful than bleeding gods? What makes them bleed? What does make gods bleed? Love, of course. Well, it's a very interesting prompt, as always, from Ben. And what do we get to read from that one?
All right. Well, from that one, we have to do, all right, let's see here. I'm trying to decide. Forgive me.
Okay. Do you want me to read the next two? Because after that, I think, is one of yours. So I can read the next two.
No,
and
I think I got it right.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Good. Sorry. No, I was just, I have it figured out where we both can read. I was just trying to decide who to assign which write to. You know what I mean?
Okay. That's, gotcha.
Yeah. Yep. All right. So I read the last one. So the next one will be yours. And it is The Player Breaks the String by Blue Leader One. And go ahead and read that, please, Dan.
Absolutely. 1 second here. See, I just finally used the mute button for a reason, for coughing, as opposed to muting myself when I am supposed to be talking. So, this is called The Player Breaks the String, Blue Leader One. You, only you, fuck you. You spit on me then, whip me. You choke me when you break me. Then you just go, leaving me completely despised, affected, and alone. I just don't want this anymore. I bruise, I bleed, I hurt so bad, I can't remember not being in agony because of you. It's terrible, terrible, terrible. I cry and die because of you. Yet, I can't quit you. I only live for you. I love the way you feel when we kiss. I'm lost in an ocean of stars, in so deep I'm drowned in the dark starlight. Broken and bleeding, I lie here waiting and wide open to receive anything you give. You break my heart, but I love the way you do it. I beg for it. It's irresistible and terrible, terrible, terrible. It's my ruin, and I know it. Yet, I'm never as alive, never so myself, as when I'm lying here near you, open wide, 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 wide to receive everything you give. I feel it in my veins, the drug of your hate. It's so real to me, it feels better than love, because I don't know love. I don't trust love, but pain is truth, and hate is real. That's how I know. This suffering is poetic and angelic. It's exquisite and final. In the last moment of my life, I'm in love again, again, again. End poem.
Great read there, Dan. And, oh, my goodness, what a powerful, emotive write by Blue Leader One. I feel like the majority of these lines being fairly short lines of 2 to 5 words each are a representative of these quick, hard verbal or physical punches being pelted on somebody. You know, there's just such an intensity the way he has structured the poem along with the word choices. Spit on me, then whip me, you choke me when you break me, then you just go, leaving me completely despised, afflicted, and alone. I just don't want this anymore. It feels like going through the cycles of an abusive relationship, but then you get to the part where it says, I love the way I feel when we kiss. I'm lost in an ocean of stars, and so deep I'm drowned in the dark starlight. You know, that is just, you know, I think for many people, relatable. I think many people, you know, part of the reason you keep going back to people that are wrong for you, to relationships that are wrong for you, is because the way they make you feel when the relationship is at that high point, you know, when the physical attraction, the kissing, you know, there's those sparks there. And yet over and over again, you're left broken and bleeding. I feel it. I really like these lines. I feel it in my veins. The drug of your hate is so real to me. It feels better than love because I don't know love. I don't trust love. But pain is truth and hate is real. That's how I know this suffering is poetic, angelic, exquisite, and final. You know, and the fact that this speaks on the idea of someone who seems not to have learned, you know, about what love is at any point in their life. And a lot of times when you are attracted to a traumatic relationship, it's because of, you know, of the way you were raised as a child, because of the idea that that's all you've ever known in your life. I also feel like there's some great use of repetition in this, especially in the end line with again and again, 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 again. That whole ugly cycle, that repetition of taking the person back over and over again and trying to let go of this misguided version of love, but not being able to. You know, so powerful, right, and very well done.
Excellent, Pam. Yes, absolutely. Blue Litter One is very, very emotive. Writes for a good amount of my contests, and I always enjoy Blue Leader. I'd love to have him call in someday. Be interesting guy to talk to, I think. But like I said, always very emotive. And yes, I got this as an abusive relationship, and there was very interesting things on there. So, you know, you can get so mad at people, and so. You take that abuse, and I'm in agony. I'm terrible. I'm in agony because of you. But then, I love the way you kiss. You know, it can be hidden. I've never really been in an abusive relationship, but I think I understand them, and it can be hidden from talking to people. You know, abusive relationships aren't all even with parents and kids. They're not all abusive. Sometimes they're abuse. But then there's love too, you know. It's almost like there'll be times when they'll reach out, but other times when they're loving and they're caring, because that's what that person wants, right? That's what that abuser at that time wants. That, so they just use the person, and the person being abused can mistake that. You know, I've heard people say, "Well, I still feel the good in him or her." You know, I know there's something there, and I know they love me. It can almost be a false sense, right? If they love the person, they wouldn't be abusing them at the same time. You know, they use them for what they want, and when that love comes, they take it. So that was very interesting. And then, yeah, I like that stanza you liked as well, too. The drug of your hate, it's so real to me, it's better than love. And that emotion can be that what is the closeness to them. You know, a lot of times people, you know, who are in abusive relationships or who do abuse, there is something about attention, right? That they're still, you know, kids do it sometimes, right? They lash out, or they cause trouble, right? They do bad things because, you know, secretly they want attention. You know, and sometimes there've been abusive relationships where people are in there because it's just, they're getting attention from this person that for whatever reason they love. You know, a lot of times, unfortunately, I think abusive relationships come where it's good for a while, and then it becomes abusive. So you love this person, and now it becomes abuse, and you're just, if that's the only way you can get attention from this person, that can happen, and you just end up, you know, I think that happens to kids, unfortunately, who are abused, right? That's what they think love is, and a lot of times, you know, I've read, seen, heard shows that, you know, people who are abusers, right, especially of children, they were abused when they were a kid. That's what they know of love. And I do like the repeating as well as you do, where it's, because it's, I think it's both talking about the repeating of the abuse, right, the repeating of the cycle, as well as it feels like it could never end. And I think that's what that repeating comes from. So excellent, Blue Leader. Always give us some great poems. And what do you want to do now?
Well, I have to say, he really does. And it would be nice to have him call in and join us sometime. That would be very cool. I did figure out that earlier when I said I had it figured out, that I really didn't actually have it figured out. which happens to the best of us. So I actually am also going to have you read the next poem, too. If
sure.
That works for you. Yeah, all right, great. And
yeah,
it is God's Hollow by Peter Solway.
Yeah, no problem. Hey, if that's your big mistake of the day, Pam, you're doing pretty damn good, so don't worry about it. Not a big deal. Yeah, absolutely, Peter Solway. This is called God's Hollow. Good name for a dismal town where all dull folks have heads bowed down. Not a soul to smile, say welcome to God's Hollow. Pause and yarn about reasons historical informed of Genesis of God's Hollow, older than the Old Testament, when people were itching apes, just eating, running, and snoozing, while sacred stars above were shining. Not meaning a thing to ape clam tossing, turning. Tartan, bagpipes, way over time's unimagined horizons. In a sad creator mourned, silent in vacuum, dead audience below, in future gods hollow, I alone to name. Hereby in neon and stone, thunder and lightning, blood of hairy virgins, signpost this depressed spot, gods hollow for all tomorrows, but for racket in blacktop park, cars with shallows going swift and fast, all dull and quiet. And poems.
Great, great read there, Dan. You know, I have to say, Peter Sully always has the most intriguing imagery and metaphors in his writes. Really gives you food for thought in a way that's uniquely his own. And I like how the title leads into the first line, God's Hollow, good name for a dismal town where all dull folks have head bowed down, not a soul to smile, say welcome to God's Hollow. It makes me think of the movie Footloose, that was based on the true story about a small town where it was against the law to dance. Of course, you have to remember Footloose with the, you know, with Kevin, I assume, right? Yes. So, but yeah, I've been being someone who has spent most of my life in small towns. I have to say there are things that I absolutely love about small towns, you know, but there are things that can, you know, be frustrating about them. Like it seems like, you know, there are no secrets kept in small towns. A lot of times you will find a stricter mindset, you know, not quite as open-minded as you might sometimes find in bigger cities, but you know, there's also really nice people. I mean, there's definitely good things about small towns. But at the same time, you know, I feel like this is that Peter writes about the type of town where people pass judgment. I actually just got done reading the book, The Witches by Stacy. Oh, I can't remember her name. But anyways, it was about the Salem witch trial. It was like, it's a nonfiction book written on the Salem witch trials. Fascinating stuff. But when, you know, when he says here, and a sad creator mourns silent and vacuum, dead audience below and future gods hollow, I alone to not name. You know, there's something about those lines and something about the whole, like, persona of the people that Peter is bringing out in his write that makes me think of the mass hysteria based on repressed sexuality and the manipulation of religion that happened during the Salem witch trials. I just really wonderful thought-provoking imagery and metaphors. I also really like where he says at the end, God's hollow for all tomorrows, but for racket and blacktop park, cars without shadows going swift and fast, all dull and quiet. And it's interesting how he goes from cars without shadows and swift and fast, all dull and quiet. The first part making me think of a small town, the ending making me think of a big city, and the idea that no matter where you are, things can be dull and quiet. And oftentimes, because I've only lived in one big city, which was Austin, Texas, but I visited other ones. And there can be a sense of loneliness, even as you're surrounded by people. And if you can't find the right people to connect with, there can also be a sense of dullness, a sense of, like I said, disconnect. But brilliant write by Peter and very well done.
Yeah, absolutely. Great ideas. Robbie says, Itching Apes puts it so straightforward. Yeah, I agree. And I think that's Itching Apes is a great Peter line. I'll give you a quick story about Peter. So he wrote a poem, and I actually asked him, this one poem he wrote, I asked him about it because I wasn't quite getting where he was going. And it was so funny. So the prompt was in it was a picture, and it had basically like a desert scene, and it had magic and so forth on it. And he goes, and he wrote this whole poem about gluttony and food and all this stuff. And I'm like, I'm trying to see the thing. He goes, sand witches, Dan. And I'm like, and it still makes me laugh that he just, the way he said it to me. And that it's like, okay, I get it. So he saw the sand and the magic sand witches. And then he wrote a poem about gluttony. And I'm like, I understand all of Peter's poems now. You know, I think they're just brilliant.
He does have a great sense of humor. He does.
He does.
He wrote
a
poem the other day where he said something, like he paraphrased in his own way, but he basically said, you know, I'd rather be writing for Pam's contest than out playing billiards with drunks.
Exactly, which probably gives you a mind into what he does when he's not writing poetry. He's out playing billiards.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
But I agree with your. I think you got it. Hit it right on this with it's talking about it. You know, going from a small town to the city, and kind of talking about almost the whole evolution of man, and it's really interesting on God's Hollow, and he's talking about kind of. Almost the way God is almost ignoring man or the way he almost sees here and just kind of letting things happen. Good name for a dismal town where all dull folks have heads bowed down, not a soul to smile, say welcome to God's Hollow. That is a, you know, I thought that was just a great little opening line. I really enjoyed reading it as well too. And then that Genesis where people were itching apes, that is really good. Just eating, running, snoozing, sacred stars. So he literally took us through almost the entire history of humanity, you know, going back to, you know, naming like a caveman almost town. And then, you know, sad creator mourn the silent vacuum, dead on its below, in future gods hollow. Now neon and stone, thunder and lightning. God's Hollow for all tomorrows. Cars Without Shadows is really, really interesting. I actually love that. I think that could be a name for a poem, a contest, and a band, and a song. I just think that's a great little phrase you could use for anything. Cars Without Shadows. I would go see Cars Without Shadows in concert.
So would I. And you know what? Coming up with band names is one of my favorite things to do. You know, every once in a while when somebody says a phrase, like somebody will say a phrase or my daughter will say something, I'll be like, that should be the name of a band.
Exactly. God's Hollow could be a band name too, actually. But Cars Without Shadows is really, really an interesting phrase, which Peter is a master at. So, awesome, Peter. A lot of fun. Really, really appreciate, really appreciate your writing. And
I was going to say, I did send you a message, a question that if you want to go ahead and answer it, it's just a simple question, but I figured it's something you might need. So,
But yeah, absolutely. We can do that, Pam. The question is yes, go for it if needed.
Sounds good. So we will move on now to prompt 3. Would you like to go ahead and read prompt 3?
I would, because you are the lone writer for prompt 3, so you get to read your poem. And the prompt is, you told him your favorite fireworks were nebulas miscarrying, galaxies falling from the sky in synchrony, bravely fleeting against the lingering of everything.
That was a beautiful prompt. And Yes, I am. I have a tendency when I write for contests, the first thing I do is see which prompts are already taken so that I can grab one that hasn't been written to yet. And that way, you know, then it gets an extra prompt, some credit. You know, it especially works well for Rex's rhythm and rhyme show because not only does it give him an extra write, it gives him an extra song to play. So it fills in more time. But that is me that you're running. yep. But this is my right, red balloons tethered to pine boughs. And it goes like this. Within the gunpowder of life are memories clinging like rabid dogs to the body of a convulsing Jezebel, sweet and salty symphonies arrogantly echoing across reincarnated rhythms bared in the blink of red balloons tethered to pine boughs. We hang like water drops to the stamen of flowers waiting to be released upon brass badges of martyred saints. There's an ooze of mud and gasoline spills sliding between toes, reaching for an exposed ankle in the falling apart of boundary lines. The italics of my once upon a time is stained with broken teeth that attempted to rip apart the core of alchemy. To better understand what changed before my eyes. What is this? This is the love that I cannot catch. Creepy white vans and free candy have never been in my budget. Swirls of paint and rainbow stigmata play the part of a hognose snake whispering lullabies to dead planets. Perhaps there will be a someday of lilacs and wine where I will swallow drunk happiness to the pit of stones and syllables. My bones are walls of graffiti writing poetry to the damned. My hands keep reaching for the collar of your shirt, only to grip the wide space of a canyon formed by an indifferent god. In the constant of your name, there are constellations yet to be born in someone else's sky. Still, I remember everything about you that I formed, that formed the rings of Saturn upon my fluttering tongue. Last words held within an intestinal tract become the painting of heartburn and bile. To find the light is no easy task when the honeysuckle chokes the stars into graveyards and boils pierced. End poem.
Excellent, excellent read. And it was a very interesting prompt. I do love the title, Red Balloons Tethered to Pine Balls. That's very interesting. So with the gunpowder of life, what a great opening line. Any kind of poetry, any kind of, just grabbed me, Pam. So anything, right? It's always that beginning you always want to get because you want to, you know, I always think of books. Like I read a lot, but I'm a picky reader as well too. I've decided I'm not going to finish a book if I'm not enjoying it. And that always, it always, you know, it's that opening chapter you want to grab people, right? It's the beginning of a movie. It's the first time you hear a song, anything you want to grab people. With the gunpowder of life, it's very, very interesting. Our memories clinging like rapid dogs to the body of a convulsing Jezebel. Wow, that's very thought-provoking. But I love the gunpowder of life, which is really, really interesting. It's almost like you're just... You know, gunpowder is nothing. It's just gunpowder, right? It doesn't do anything, but it's volatile. It can be used for explosions, right? It can just sit there and be nothing, but you know, with the right, you know, the right formula, the right kind of fire that comes on it, it's lethal. Sweet and salty symphonies, arrogantly echoing across reincarnated rhythms, barred in the blink of, and I promise I won't analyze the whole thing, but this is very, very interesting with all the metaphors. Reincarnated rhythms, barred in the blink of red balloons tethered to pine boughs. We hang like water droplets on the stamen. I thought it'd be very, very interesting as well, too. Of flowers waiting to be released. It is so kind of universal. You know, the one thing I got about Ben's prompt to me, just reading the prompt by itself, it got to be that, you know, that's kind of your thing is to be marveled by the universe and how big it is and how small we are. And that kind of feels like that to me, that stanza there of, you know, we hang like water droplets to that stamen. So you're seeing all the sweet and salt and salt and symphonies and reincarnated rhythms is interesting because rhythms are something that's cyclical, right? They kind of keep going. and we're still hanging on as water drops to the stamen. So this kind of very fragile thing that's hanging on to the essence and the flower, waiting to be released upon brass badges of martyred saints. What was the other part here I was looking at? Oh, my bones are. I don't know, Pam. You're inspiring me all over the place over here. My bones are walls of graffiti. Yeah, it's a good thing. My bones are walls of graffiti, writing poetry to the damned. Jesus, that's a great line. I'm going to read it again. My bones are walls of graffiti, writing poetry to the damned. It's so, you know, deep that you can write on sometimes, and sometimes it's walls of graffiti. So you're writing on your, you're writing to your soul, you're writing to your inner self, right? And that's what we all do here as poets, you know. I don't know why, but hope is one person I'm thinking of who just writes so, you know, intimate. And I think so many people here write so intimate and so personal, and that's how, you know, we feel as poets, where we can kind of let that out, you know, say that's what I think the beauty of poetry is. You can just say things that aren't, you know, normal speech, right? It's so hard to express yourself sometimes in the normal language we use. Poetry to the damned is very interesting. The very end here now, to find light is no easy task. When the honeysuckle chokes the stars into graveyards and boils pierced. Yeah, the flowers are very interesting to me. So I'll let you say whatever you want. And Robbie says, "Oh, I like that cosmic imagery." Yeah, me too. My question to you, if it's okay if I ask, is where you got the all the flower imagery from Ben's prompt and what you were saying with that, if that's okay to ask.
Specifically for Ben's prompt, that is a good question, and I'm trying to remember how that came about. A lot of times, I'll kind of stray off in my own direction, and I do have a tendency to use flower imagery. Well, and I think it part of the flower imagery was because in his lines, he says nebulas miscarrying. And now, yeah, that's out in space there. But to me, you know, miscarriage is death. It is loss. And flowers, they're beautiful. You know, they're just, to me, flowers are just as beautiful as the stars. But they are so temporary. They are like this fleeting moment. And while you can look at the flower and you can be like, right there is a representation of beauty, of life and love. But it is so fragile that it could just so easily be crushed within a moment's notice. You know what I mean?
It's
that representation of something beautiful that can be easily lost.
Yeah, and I get that, and you know it is as you're saying it, I said, oh yeah, you know what, I can see that now. Oh, first of all, I want to say that I totally get that. In fact, I didn't realize I had a poem that I wrote for Faziana actually put on here, and I'm thinking like, oh shoot, I'm probably gonna have no idea what I wrote about, because I read some of my old poems and I'm like, what the hell was I talking about? What was I thinking? Because I write it, right? You write it, or it takes me, you know, whatever time. I usually take a walk, I write the poem, it takes me 15, 20 minutes to write it. I organize it, I put it in there, and then I don't think about it again for, you know, a year. So that happens to me like constantly. But I can, yeah, it's, you know, if you've ever seen images of space where you're seeing kind of nebulas or you're seeing stars explode or they're showing, if you've ever seen the videos of what they think it's going to look like when galaxies collide and the stars go around. Now, obviously, when you look at the videos, they're doing it in extreme fast motion. But it reminds me of flowers. You know, when flowers open up, it almost reminds me of a galaxy, the way when you see a flower in fast motion opening up. There's so many parallels in nature. You know, flowers and you know, things in space. The Fibonacci sequence, I don't want to get too, you know, technical here, but if anybody looks up what the Fibonacci sequence is, it's this amazing sequence that's found in nature, a lot of times in spirals and shells and other things. It's like this perfect combination. And you can also see it in space too. So I can totally see that imagery of comparing flowers, the way they open, the way they move to, you know, galaxies and so forth. So. Yeah, so awesome job, Pam. Beautiful, beautiful poem.
Thank you very much, and thank you to Ben and you and Afasiana for the inspiration.
Sure. And Robbie said, you're making me look at my spider plants now. So there we go. We're inspiring Robbie to look at his spider plants.
Well, there you go. Very cool. Very cool. It's good to have Robbie hanging on the board. All right,
absolutely.
So now we're going to move on to prompt 4, and that is, but that the stars were built by man, machines of nature at war against the dark, God's hollow where love is cold. And I'm actually going to put up first for that prompt the one right you have that has a SoundCloud, and I'm putting it with that one because it was written to multiple prompts. And I figure, you know, we'll just stick it right there with that one because that was one of the ones it was written to. And it is Whimsy in Molotov Cocktails and Dragon's Breath by Intimidus Rex.
Oh, to the chalice of your labia, where madness lingers in the volume of mead spilt upon a parched tongue, lost in quicksand illusions, bled crossed my sanity. Dying in blue lotus eruptions of Kemet divinity. I lie in that curvature of Vanta, crying in blistering twinkles for my love Eos, heart bursting Tunguska as she kisses me goodnight in her coral and cobalt bris. Hunting alone as she beds that mink of solace neath Selene's liquid pharmaco to dream, to sleep, within me? You always said Chinese New Year was like New Orleans during Mardi Gras, or a funeral dirge down Basin Street, festive and raucous dragons, crackers and Molotov cocktails, gleaming in those emerald irises, dancing a jig at the corners of your mouth, while you whistle Dixie in I Ching metaphors. Calabash, smoking turnstiles and hash emperor clothing, flesh rugging the rouge and knee prayers to the hookah you fondled. Third eye synergy blanketed in a purple haze of opium warming your mind, chasing that dragon of memento mori forget-me-nots and the gods who made them. You gave me light to grow and night to sleep, yet I was born in death while I am living to die. That irony is not lost on me, but your wit is a touch dark and twisted in its necrotic whimsy. Yes?
Excellent, excellent. Reed, thanks to the SoundCloud Rex. And who has a better voice than Rex, right? I'll give you the answer to that question.
He's got an amazing voice. That is for
sure. He does. He's perfect for these for hosting shows. So. And reading because he's got that great voice. So really interesting. I didn't realize how erotic Ben's poems were. They were inspiring all kinds of sensuality. So way to go, Ben. There you go. So yeah, this was interesting, and it was to multiple prompts that he did of Ben's. I caught possibly another Shakespeare reference there, which is in the 1, 2, 3, 4th stanza. He said, to dream, to sleep with me. I don't know if that's true, but I think it's to sleep, perchance to dream. I believe that's a famous Shakespeare quote. Let me see here.
That one, yes, I believe it is.
So, and towards the end, we have, you gave me light to grow and night to sleep, yet I was born in death while I am living to die. That's very interesting. It comes right below memento mori, forget-me-nots, and the gods who made them. But you gave me light to grow and night to sleep, yet I was born in death while I am living to die. Really philosophical and interesting, you know, is light to grow and night to sleep. But you are, I mean, technically we're born in death because we're not living, right? And then we're born out of that. But, you know, it's that old adage of basically, you know, I've heard people say, you know, from the second you're born, you're dying, right? Because basically you're now, you know, just every second closer to the end of your life, whenever that's going to be. You know, I know physically, you know, we're growing, right? We're still growing and getting, you know, becoming into ourselves. And then once we stop growing in 20 something, whatever, then we're slowly not growing. We're slowly getting older and getting less and less, you know, less renewing our bodies. But, you know, kind of technically, right? You live to die, right? You basically, you know, everyone's living to that. Well, what's your end point? You know, what's the purpose? What's the finality, right? If I'm the finality of, you know, this show is to make it through the show and have a good show and be done and everything's there, right? What's the finality of my life? You die. So very, very, very interesting the way he put that in. And I don't know what other word to use except poetic. You know, he made this so poetic and beautiful to read. That irony is not lost on me, but your wit is a touch dark and twisted with neurotic whimsy. Yes. Yeah. Interesting. Let's see, what was the other part here? Yeah, hunting alone as she beds that milk of solace needs Selene's liquid pharmaco. And Selene is, I believe, I don't know if this is what he's referring to, I believe is the sun. The moon. I said the wrong thing, is the moon, right. So beneath the moon's liquid pharmaco to dream to sleep within me. You know, the way he's kind of going back and forth between sensuality and the heavens and the internal in all of us is interesting. So very deep, very full of great metaphors. Thanks, Rex. Awesome, awesome job. And, of course, Rex is, I think, being a rocker himself, Rex, he has these great titles. Whimsy is Molotov Cocktails and Dragon's Breath. I don't know why I relate that to music, but I do. I think his title is very, very musical in nature. But anyway, what do you think of your friend, Rex?
He does have great titles. I think he likes Molotov Cocktails, though, because I've seen him put the word Molotov Cocktail on other titles. Not a whole lot, but enough to where it's out. So he must be a huge fan of them or something. I don't know. but yes, always impressive. I am always impressed by Rex's writing and his reading voice. So I'm glad he made a SoundCloud for us. And Rex has always had what I call intelligent sensuality. Like, there's an intelligence to it, but there's also, as you were mentioning, you know, there's a sensuality, but there's also that philosophical bend to it. The imagery and metaphors are brilliant and beautiful. I really, to me, the main message I get from this is the idea of the twisting of fate that blossoms into both love and madness to the point where you can barely tell the two apart. Now, it's interesting because you brought up Selene. You first said the sun. But the sun is actually mentioned in this. You know, it says, my love, Eos. Eos is actually the goddess of the dawn. She's the representation of the rising sun. So right before you have Selene, who is the goddess of the moon, you have the goddess of the dawn. So you have both lights. You have this juxtaposition of the both of the different kinds of light, each in their own time, each appreciated in their own way. I did like the use of the phrase memento mori, you know, and how he speaks on kismet, fate, and how, you know, it's the idea that we have so very little control over our own lives. You know, sometimes you can make all the right decisions, say all the right things, and things just don't quite go as planned. But that's part of the fun of the ride. I really thought there was a lot of heart in the lines. You gave me light to grow and night to sleep, yet I was born in death while I am living to die. And you had brought that up. It's the idea of being so focused on death that, you know, because we are, you know, we are from the moment we are born, we are dying, and yet we have to kind of be able to push those thoughts aside in order to appreciate life. But, you know, when you're somebody who has a heavy soul, it's oftentimes, I think, difficult to not be burdened down by the big questions of life. And I did like that he ended this with the question and with the juxtaposition of that question. But your wit is a touch dark and twisted in its necromantic whimsy. Necromantic whimsy, you know, the idea of using the word for like death or rotting, a rotting corpse with whimsy, I thought was quite clever. The metaphors in this and is just brilliant with the idea of, it's almost like here's somebody who offers both emotionally pleasure and pain, and an opportunity to grow, but at the same time, I feel like it kind of has this expression of, you know, as I was saying, life spinning a bit out of control. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Excellent, Pam. Excellent as always. All right. What do you want to do now?
All right. Well, up next to that same prompt is Ben's Broken Heart by Bill Schiller. And go ahead, please, Dan, and give that a read.
From my friend Bill Schiller. Ben's Broken Heart. Prompt once. Beyond the teeth, you stun me like the rabid bite between your lips and tongue. Your breath is perfume of spite mixed with bricksaw's hum. Prompt twice. In separation, space exists. God is gravity. There are distinctions in distances, like having party when parents take vacation. To win revolution requires revelation. Between blank spaces, forces are focused and spin. Prompt thrice. 45 muzzled. Let me match your vengeful quiet with morose measures of stoic silence, of the blind remarks I'd share with you. The kindness may leave you begrudged, but not bemused. Prompt quad. The close curtain didn't allow a look in. And only now you choose to pursue absent facts. My scowl is packaged with costumes in your garbage stack. Will you accept me or your lying black eyes? Sneak peeks cannot distinguish between what's thought or realized. End poem. And Ben wrote, this writing was completely inspired by a totality of lines in prompts.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Yeah, I like that Bill was inspired by a totality of lines. I also like how he did a sort of a vignette, like how Ben always writes vignettes, but he did it in his own way. Like instead of saying, you know, like 1, 2, 3 in Roman numerals, he's like prompt once, prompt twice, prompt thrice, prompt quad. I don't know. There's something very unique and catchy about that that I really enjoyed. I feel like he's really captured the spirit of Ben's writing. I really like your breath is perfume of spite mixed with brick saws hum. The idea of a, you know, I mean, I'm guessing a brick saw is a saw that cuts bricks. And I don't know what they look like, but I do know that, like, you know, table saws I've been around, and, you know, they're very loud. They're very dangerous. You know, you want to keep your hands and every other appendage out of its way. But, yeah, to me, those first lines speak on somebody who has those biting remarks. You know, all the way through, you really feel the pain. You feel the idea of somebody being torn apart. With morose measures of stoic silence of the blind remarks I share with you, the kindness. Kindest may leave you begrudged, but not bemused. And I like that because it makes me think of the whole idea of somebody's kind words or acts of kindness going unappreciated and unnoticed. And my scowl is packaged with costumes in your garbage sack. You know, interesting lines. The whole idea of, you know, having to pack away your scowl in somebody else's garbage sacks, having to perhaps it, you know, it's that distinction or that idea that of putting on that fake smile and never being able to pull out the anger and the disappointment that you feel. Wonderful, thoughtful lines and very well done.
Absolutely, Pam. And I did like his prompt once, twice, thrice, quad, and I think that's a good tribute to Ben, who if you read Ben's poems, you know, his ones of the last year or so, he has his style is now putting things in sections. I actually wrote something, you know, mirroring for Ben, mirroring his style, but I just did, you know, section 1, 2, 3 like he did. It was not as inventive as Bill, so Bill, excellent way to put that. Yeah, I liked the imagery here. So at the beginning, you stunned me like the rabid bite between your lips and tongue. That's really interesting. You know, a person's mouth is such a huge part, especially in love, because, you know, the mouth is essential. The mouth is a kiss, right? So even the most, the most intense of romances usually start with a kiss, right? Everybody has had a kiss, even young kids, if they're, you know, on a date, might have a quick kiss. But mouth's also where words come from, the most powerful tool of man it's ever been, right? I've always said that words cause every war that's ever been, every problem, and also cause all the root of all the love and the beauty in the world. It's words, and those all come from, I mean, they can come from writing too, right? But, you know, generally they come from vocals. And you stun me like a rabbit bite, so that to have that, I think, is interesting. Your breath is perfume of spite mixed with brick saws hum. Yeah, the rhyming is great on this as well too. Let me go down to the end. And only now you choose to pursue absent facts. My scowl is packaged with costumes in your garbage sack. will accept me with your lying black eyes. Sneak peeks do not distinguish between what's thought or realized. You know, we talked about abusive relationships before and those lying black eyes. You know, sneak peeks cannot distinguish between what's thought or realized. So I think that's interesting, like basically saying that you can't trust the person. You know, what is this person going to do? You know, and that can be in a relationship that you don't trust somebody. You don't really know what they're going to do. You know, and it can scare you because you don't know how they're going to act, right? Sneak peeks, so things that they've done before, can't distinguish, so you don't know. And I think that can be in a bad relationship, right, especially an abusive one. You never know when this person's going to act out, you know. It can be any time. You know, if it's a real abusive relationship, it's not necessarily something you did. You know, people will try to figure out, like, you know, sometimes there'll be people who are being abused are very, very submissive, and they try to just not, they want to do whatever they can to not get attacked. But it's nothing they're doing, right? It's just happening, and you can't predict it. So I thought that was very interesting, that line as well. Yeah. Awesome job, Bill. Way to rock it. All right. What are we going to do now?
Well, up next, we are going to have two rites that are inspired by Ben's visual art, which, as you have mentioned before, he is also a very talented visual artist as well as a poet. And up next, we have Within the Prism by Afasiana. Fragile wish through rose-tinted spectacles, carrying hope, but afraid to breathe, tiptoeing into the unknown, remaining tagged by uncertainty, knowing there's risk of return. Sharing none of my hesitation, he leaps, widespread wonder, unrestrained, dancing within the possibility of every shade of the spectrum. Our quests intersect, we pause, kindred in values, he with the sturdy dignity like the old growth trees, me with my wayward whimsy, a firefly and a falling leaf, brief encounter of parallel paths, recharged with the knowledge good intentions still exist. The pink lenses traded for blue. I know his path is cold, but he chose freedom's wind when I sought warmth, and he will have clarity beyond my cloudy foresight. End poem.
Awesome read. And this is this one and the next poem are actually from Ben's contest. So the quotes was a contest by Afasiana honoring Ben and for our show. But then Ben actually had a contest on his own using his artwork as prompts, and this was written towards that. And if anybody kind of follows the links around to the contest it was on, the poem, the painting is very interesting. I can just describe. I'll never do it justice, right? But it's just this person walking down a path, which might actually be Ben. And it's interesting what he did with his artwork, because I believe it's a real picture that he colored of sky and of walking down a path in between some, it almost looks like a marsh with a wooden path in the middle of it. And then there's this cartoon woman painted, almost looks anime, in the sky on the clouds, you know, as someone's thoughts. It's a really beautiful it's a really beautiful picture. In fact, I was thinking about writing for that one. So thanks, Ben, for the contest. Now, Within the Prism, so she goes, fragile wish through rose-tinted spectacles, carrying hope but afraid to breathe, tiptoeing into the unknown and then being tagged by uncertainty. And I think that's really interesting, you know, in that when you when you're walking in these places, even if I've been there before, I do feel like I'm a little bit into the unknown, because you really don't know what's going to happen. You know, I have some wooded places and places around where I am, and you know, there's no bears or, you know, lions or any or poisonous snakes where I am or anything like that. But you're still in this area. You never really know, right? Even in the city, you never really know what's going to come around. I've been harassed and almost attacked in my city here. Just walking around, you kind of don't know what's going to come on. But I thought that was an interesting take there. I'll skip down. Our quests intersect. We pause kindred values. He with sturdy dignity, like the growth trees. Me with my wayward whimsy. So, you know, it's whether she's with the person or whether she's seeing them, you know, you can just kind of, you know, see the quests intersecting. And sometimes it can even be thoughts, right? So based on the poem, you know, you can think that they're, you know, the quests are intersecting because now you're with them. And I think about that, you know, philosophically and metaphysically sometimes I think about that, like, you know, if I'm, like with my wife, sometimes I'll if I'm taking a walk, if I'm at work or somewhere, I'll call her and I'll say, hey, I'm calling you so you can take a walk with me. But whoever you're thinking about, they're kind of with them, right? I have this crazy theory. I always tell people when I dream about them, if they're in my dreams, and not, you know, I'm not trying to say anything sensual. Just usually in dreams, people are just walking around. They're just in the dream doing something, and I'll just say, hey, did you have a dream last night? I'm just really dying to wait to have some. Once in my life, I want them to say, yeah, and you were in it, and it was the same dream. Like, I want that to happen at one point in my life.
That would be cool. I've never had that happen, but that would be cool.
Where you have the same dream, and you're like, oh, shit, that was the same dream. What does that mean? That's never happened. Where are we here? At the end, the pink lenses traded for blue. I know this path is cold, but he chose freedom's wind when I sought warmth. Yeah, so really interesting that she went that sad way, where, because the person in the painting is kind of, their head is kind of down, so they're walking into this unknown, this kind of desolate area in this winding path, and their head is down, so they do almost look solace, and this, you know, this beautiful woman is in the clouds, so almost like he did leave that, you know, that person, and now they're off, he's off on their own, and still thinking of her, and she's off in this magical land, and, you know, he, where, because that's where she is, and he doesn't have her anymore. So beautiful imagery, Aphasiana. You know, we all know Aphasiana for her great comments and great shows, but she's an underrated poet, I think, on her own, and always has really great, great imagery and feeling in her poem. So awesome job, Aphasiana. If you're listening, I hope you feel better. We miss you. And you got to read it. What did you think?
Oh, this is beautiful. And yes, Faizy, she is a brilliant poetess. I love how she puts, she's inspired by the prompt, and yet she puts so much of herself, I think, into this, right? Like, I really see Faizy within the lines, me with my wayward whimsy, a firefly on a falling leaf. And, you know, this is amazing imagery and metaphors, heartfelt lines. You know, the main thing it speaks about to me is the idea of people who see things differently and who want different things. And so there ends up eventually being a separation. You know, you can see that in the end lines. The pink lens is traded for blue. I know his path is cold, but he chose freedom's wind when I sought warmth, and he will have clarity beyond my cloudy foresight. At least that's how I interpret it, that end line, with the idea that, you know, if you offer somebody warmth, if you say to somebody, I need warmth from you, and I'm willing to offer it to you in return, but they choose freedom's wind, to me that's the idea that they decided to head out. But you definitely have people of two different personalities here, two different ways of seeing things. And, you know, I wonder, though, as I'm reading and I'm talking, you know, it could be actually literally two different people, or it could be the idea of, you know, like, I'm not saying multiple personalities, but, you know, the idea of how we all have different parts of ourselves that are represented at different times, and, you know, how we can be one way with some people and one way with another. You know, we're depending on the situation we're in is depending on how much of our a different side of our personality is brought out. I really like the imagery and dancing with the possibility of every shade of the spectrum. The idea that somebody who views life in a way that many other people don't. They see the things, the colors that many others are unable to or just plain don't want to see. So amazing write by Afasiana, and very well done.
Absolutely. Thank you, Pam. Great comment as always. Now, what do you want to do?
Well, as you have probably guessed and won the prize for guessing right, we have your right.
Okay, I can torture you guys with my right for a little bit, no problem. And yeah, this was also written for Ben's contest on his own prompts, and I wrote for a very interesting, I thought picture of his, which is like a shadow picture. It's this picture of the woods, and everything's dark. It's kind of at nighttime, and there were these two shadow figures, so there's no details on them. It looks like a young girl and a young boy standing in the woods, kind of facing each other on a small hill, so it's almost like they just met there. And Ben honored me and gave me the gold, so Ben, I'm very honored that you actually gave me gold on this. Amazing that you did that. So hold on a second here. I just lost the poem. Here it is. So I did try to copy Ben's style as well, too. So I did what he did, which is put it in sections with titles, just to honor Ben's style, because I think it's very interesting and it's been inspiring to me. So Ben, here you go. This is called I Belong to the Shadows. 1, why do we hope? Sometimes I don't feel human, meaning part of humanity, an alien lost on an alien shore. I'm not trying to be different. I'm just trying to be me. When I think I found like-minded souls, eventually they all turn the same. Humanity, of which I'm not sure is me. 2, discovery. Light is a source of filtered truth to interpret from the muddled minds of the masses. I stand on city streets as a being of brick, invisible until annoyance, ignored until in the way. But my shadow seems to melt with the others as they walk by. 2 shadows are 1. 3, escape. But the forest, there is freedom. There is no courtroom except survival. In the world of men, thoughts seem sad as a child hiding in his room reading a book as other children play outside, whereas trees seem the liberator of thought. Forest silence and empty canvas, while paper like a black hole, I am obsessed with its purity. Why ruin it with paint or words? But eventually, the headaches will start and I will have to let it out. Parchment of calm forest air, clear, ancient, will stain the blood of my ramblings. Do birds hear my voice as I hear them sing? The mockingbird does not imitate. He leaves me in peace, unlike the mocking man. Shadow soul, part 4. A shadow casting a shadow in the shadow realm. Twilight, the life between birth and death. I freeze it, hibernation. A painting of time travel kaleidoscope fluctuation that leaves me between worlds. Part 5, Muse Merge. A shadow before me in the twilight universe. We stare, but the forest, the city, remember when they were rocks? The rocks turn to sand. The sand falls through my fingers into an hourglass that is time. My time. I smash the hourglass, and the sand within burns from my sadness to turn to glass itself. All is glass. All is a mirror. The twilight world. What time stops as the shadows that meet. I do not reveal what blocks the sun to make them. She thinks the same. End poem.
Wonderful reading right there, Dan. And oh my goodness, definitely a well-deserved gold. You have done an excellent job of writing in the vignette style. You know, vignettes, honest to goodness, are the one form I cannot do. I would rather, you know, for some reason I've tried and I just cannot write vignettes. So I gave up on that idea a long time ago. But this is gorgeous and brilliant imagery and metaphors. I really like how this is a rite that is philosophical and speaks on, you know, the idea of changing times, changing lives and perspectives, the idea of the nostalgia of love. Let's see, I feel like your mind goes for this walk down this forest trail and allows us to come along with you. I really like where you say, parchment of calm forest air, clear, ancient, will stain with the blood of my ramblings. Do birds hear my voice as I hear them sing? And I like that because, you know, as someone who likes to go walking on the trails in the woods, and, you know, I find that it's a place to you know, just observe and you know, just find those that poetic inspiration. And I love that question, do birds hear my voice as I hear them sing? Like, you know, as you're listening to these birds and they sound so beautiful and so pure, what do they think in return of your voice? And I like how you say, light is a source of filtered truth to interpret from the muddled minds of the masses. I stand on city streets as a being of brick, invisible until annoyance, ignored until in the way, but my shadow seems to melt with the others as they walk by. And isn't that the truth of life? Isn't that the truth of humanity, that too oftentimes we do not notice each other until a person has become an inconvenience? And what a shame that is. And I smash the hourglass and the sand within burns from my sadness to turn to glass itself. You know, and there's two things I get from that. One is the idea of wanting to turn back time in order to go back to, you know, spend time with those loved ones that we no longer have with us. And the other thing is the idea that too oftentimes we allow time to manipulate and control us. You know, like we have to get this done by a certain time and that done. And some of it, of course, obviously is the reality of life. But oftentimes it's the pressures that we put on ourselves. You know, this is just an amazing rite all the way through and very well done. Did you want to say anything about your poem, Dan?
Yeah, thanks for what amazing comments. This is because I'm very egotistical, but I'm going to say it anyway. Most of my poems, I look back and I go, ugh, I really don't like them. I actually like this one because I totally forgot I wrote it.
And
when I was reading it, I was like, oh, this one actually is pretty good. I might I post a lot of my poems on LinkedIn and Instagram, and I might actually post some snippets of this. I was like, oh, this one actually came out pretty good. A lot of it was the beginning part. What do I hope? It was kind of what I was feeling at the time. I did try to write a little bit of a story. This is what I was feeling at the time. I was really, a lot of times, I think we probably all feel like this. I just feel like nobody understands me, and I'm not really part of humanity. I'm me. I just don't feel correct. And, you know, that was that, then go into that, you know, like you were saying, I'm glad it came out right, you know, that you can understand it, or, you know what I'm saying. I always get the, you know, I think we all get the fear that we're writing stuff and people, you know, we're not expressing ourselves right. So it's always good to hear when people interpret it the way you want. That, you know, sometimes you just feel like, you know, you're just brick and nobody really cares. You're just not there, but until you're an annoyance, you're in the way. But our shadows meld together, right? Our shadows are the same, you know. So if you look at everyone's shadows, they're really the same. We are all the same in a lot of ways. And when two shadows come together, it's really one shadow, you know. You know, you can merge like that and you're all the same. You're all together in that shadow. As the shadows cross each other, you know, they just merge together. And then I just kind of went into the forest and I wrote, that silence is an empty canvas, and eventually the headaches start after lit. I wrote that for Ben, just trying to describe, you know, expression. Like, to me, I feel like that's with him. Like, he has to express. You know, he has so much expression in him. To me, I feel like, you know, and that was that, you know, parchment of clear, you know, forest that you get that nice clean parchment, but we have to, but we all as writers, you know, stain it with the blood of our ramblings. And then the shadow soul, I just, you know, and muse merge. I use the word muse again for Ben too, because he, that's like his favorite word. He uses it in almost every poem. And so I pictured this, if you look at the painting, these two people, like I just pictured going into this kind of shadow world and like you said, like kind of smashing the hourglass and just freezing time in this, you know, in this twilight world, being stuck in this world kind of in between day and night and twilight and meeting somebody who is also a shadow. So back to the shadows where we're all the same. And then all of a sudden meeting somebody that's also in the shadow world that, ooh, here's somebody maybe that understands me. So I tried to have a little happy ending to the story, but yeah, thanks. You know, thank you for the amazing comment and for the gold, Ben. I'm very, very honored. Among all the great poems, and they're always honored when that type of thing happens. So anyway, that's what I was thinking when I wrote it, and we need to
very
move on.
Cool. And you know what? Yep. I think we're going to have really good timing because we have two poems from a contest of Aphasianas, and I think, you know, we might be able to get through at least one, possibly
yeah,
both of them. All right. And they are both inspired by this quote. There's so much of my past self that I don't resonate with at all anymore, but I love her just the same. She was growing. She was doing her best. She fought hard to get me here. And the first write I'm going to put up is The Mirror Remembers by Virtual Anomaly. Where if a mirror shone unambiguous truth, a negative to the photo from which I stare from, only crows and crickets would be absent of intrigue. From the still and proper smile, I see the eyes of mischief, dreaming of levitation and an assortment of powers. What a smirk I see in his dark hallway, projecting his superlative demeanor, fully aware his scant prowess as judge, yet he doesn't care, does he? Desperately hiding pride through kind silence and patience, but he so wants to tell you what he knows, you yet circumvents any diminutive receiver, that which he sees as fallen prey, the indoctrinated, the weak. Still, in all this contorted grappling of the human predicament, in self-preservation, in scoring an edge, in self-indulgence, there is the strongest and purest form of love for the singular and vast that he would expand and share most readily in the moments he may dissolve his disappointments. A time tornado sees the younger man staring into the mirror, a man who studied white paper and wet paint, whose ribs burned with fire, whose legs ached to leap, whose father must vanish, ballistically swimming from the ocean floor to thrust a waterspout high above earth. End poem.
Awesome. Awesome read. Very interesting. I'm hitting follow right now, Virtual Anomal. I haven't followed you before, but I really like this. And for those just listening on, there's a poem of it looks like kind of a young businessman, well-groomed, in a kind of standard bathroom, staring kind of blankly at the mirror. Where if a mirror shown unambiguous truth, you know, The Mirror Remembers, first of all, is a great title. The negative to the photo from which I stare, only crows and crickets will be absent of intrigue. When a smirk I see in his dark hallway, projecting superlative demeanor, fully aware his scant prowess as judge, yet he doesn't care, does he? a lot of this is talking, I think, about kind of that, you know, the two-faced that most of us are a lot of times, right? Are we truly ourselves? Are we truly speaking our minds all the time? You know, being from Boston myself, I can say that most people around here have zero filters and just speak to them all the time. But still, are you, you know, what are you actually saying? And it's true. How much truth are you of yourself? You know, a lot of times we do come across. We have to. I mean, I'm in business, you know, and I go on these meetings. I have to, you know, meet with people, and I'm nervous a lot of times, you know, and I'm a little shy, and I don't want to necessarily be there, but I have to, you know, sometimes I'm very anxious, sometimes I'm, you know, sad, sometimes all these things, but as a manager, I have to always portray the calmness and always portray that, you know, around people, and you do that sometimes. And where was this part here that I really, hold on a second. It was, I don't know why I can't find it, but anyway, it's very interesting about that. So maybe this time tornado sees the younger man staring in the mirror, a man who studied white paper, wet paint, whose ribs burn with fire. I mean, I don't know how many times I've looked in the mirror and said, you know, how am I old now? Like, this is me. I don't look in mirrors much. I really don't. Even when I'm like combing my hair, I just kind of comb it. But when I look in the mirror and look at myself, I'm like, you know, this is really me. This is this person. You know, how did I get from a little kid to here? So these are interesting questions, I think, that he really delves into in a beautiful, beautiful way. So great job, Virtual Anomaly. And Pam, what do you think?
I like this. I like this. The line, a negative to the photo from which I stare from, is great not only because of the imagery, but because it's a great reflection of the picture of the that is attached to the quote. Because if you look at it, you know, it's the girl on top is all in light colors, and then the girl on the bottom is dark colors. The darker colors are the reflection. So I think that works really well. And to me, this mainly speaks on the idea of being our own worst critic. But I think it can work on the idea of two parts of ourselves and how, you know, maybe the past self was more of a critic and but never had anything to offer up as far as, you know, good advice. There was just the criticism, but can also be the idea of, you know, being in relationships or knowing those type of people who are the critics but don't have constructive criticism. And I really did like those lines. The time tornado sees the younger man staring into the mirror, a man who studied white paper and wet paint, whose ribs burned with fire, whose legs ached to leap. You know, the enthusiasm of youth gives way to a more of a calmness and a maturity as we get older. I also really like desperately hiding pride through kind silence and patience, but he wants to tell you what he knows, yet circumvents any diminutive receiver. You know, people oftentimes are very willing to give opinions. They're not always willing to take them. I thought this had amazing imagery, metaphors, powerful line, and was very well done.
Absolutely, Pam. Absolutely. All right. We can do probably our last one for the night. We have time. We should have time for Blatant B. I like Blatant B a lot. He writes for a lot of contests as well, too. One of the reasons I like him, right on his site, he says, my poetry is based on real life stories and experiences, which is great because I actually write the opposite. So I very much appreciate that style because it's something I have trouble. You said what you have trouble with. I always go into these fantasy kind of scenarios. So I really appreciate Blaine's poetry. And I'd be happy to read it. This is called DMs from the Future. Climbing clouds again. Fearing the endless precipitation, dodging the rays of summer, treating pain with elixir to numb the flash floods, rising to your waist, fixated on timepieces, to move on to the next. Excuse me, particle of matter that points and narrowly lets each step feel like you're about to fall. I've failed you because I didn't allow my feet to anchor you into the soil like a germinating seed clinging into life. I failed soil was barren and washed all the rain to the water table, eventually allowing me to sink and eventually drown. End poem. And Blatant writes, my self-esteem in the past never allowed me to live, is his author's notes. Pam, your ladies first, your thoughts?
All right, well, great read there. I like that title, Direct Messages from the Future. Very cool. You know, for the longest time, I did not know that DM stood for direct messages. And it was only just a couple years ago that I finally asked someone. And I honestly thought DM always stood for Dungeon Master, like when you play Dungeons and Dragons.
Yep. I didn't know that till just this second when you told me. So there you go. I didn't know what DM, and so thank you for telling me.
Yep, you're welcome. You're welcome. But yeah, I too really enjoy and appreciate Blatant B's poetry and how he writes from real life and how oftentimes he brings science into his writing as an expression of emotions. You know, like a germinating seed clinging to life, I feared a soil was barren and washed all the rain to the water table, eventually allowing me to sink and eventually drown. And again, we look at the idea that we are our own worst enemies, you know, that the idea that we are that inner voice that brings us down. And I like a DM from the future, the idea of you know, your future self saying to your past self, hey, stop being so hard on yourself. With every negative thought you have about yourself, you are pulling yourself down. You're eventually not going to be able to come back up. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Absolutely. And yeah, we just have a couple of minutes left. So quickly, I agree with everything you said on that. My wife says that to me all the time, that I'm really hard on myself, and I think I probably am. And so I understand, Blatant, if you were going through that, you know, I probably went through some of the same things. You know, I failed you because I didn't allow my feet to anchor you. So it's like, you know, I didn't allow my feet to anchor you to the soil. So not that this person's feet shouldn't be anchored. It's my fault that you failed. You know, I should have been there and helped you along. And then I just like how deep he went. I feared the soil was barren, washed all the rain to the water table eventually. So he's like so washed and down under the ground to the water table to sink and drown, which I thought was really cool. Yeah, climbing clouds again, but then feeling endless participation, dodging rays of summer. And he goes all the way to that next particle of matter that disappoints and narrowly lets each step feel like you are about to fall. It is really interesting how you can just, you know, put yourself down so much and climb and fall and climb and fall, but you climb almost just to fall, and you take on every, you know, in this, I think he's taking on every particle of matter. Which you can do, you know, and you bring your own self-esteem down, you know, and if other people are bringing your self-esteem down, it's because you're letting them do that, right? So awesome, Blatant. So glad we got your poetry in, and right on time. It is 11:59. Pam, you are sunshine on a cloudy day every day because you always come to the rescue, and so appreciative of it. Faith for coming on and helping out on the show. Afasiana, I hope you're feeling better. We miss you, and we will. I'll look forward to listening to your Sinner and Saint show tomorrow night, and I hope everybody has a fantastic evening. Thank you for listening, and if you did, Pam, again, thanks for joining, and Robbie and everybody on the board, thank you very much. Everybody have a fantastic evening. Night, Pam. We'll see you later.